Okay, welcome everyone. Good to see you. Toby with me here in person. Cole from the Berkshires, Henry from Chicago, Zadie from the Five Towns now. Can't be Frog anymore. They moved Cedarhurst now. Oh, I don't know what street are they're like near Hafter. It's what street are you on, Zadie? It's being recorded.
I'm Grove Avenue.
Okay, there you go, Grove Avenue. If that means anything.
Across the street from the mikveh.
Oh, very good. And looks like we have Judd, Mayor, Phyllis, and Oliver with us as well. Presumably, all in Connecticut. Welcome, Irwin. And we find ourselves on Tes Vav Amabiz on 15B. So we're going to talk about this a little more today. That Esther organizes a meal. We'll get to this and we'll discuss this more in depth in the Gemara. But an interesting question comes up, which is, as we know, Esther invites Ahasuerus and Haman to this banquet. By the way, I never fully understood it because presumably they're living in a lap of luxury. They could have, you know, they could ask for a steak at any moment. So I'm not quite sure what she was providing that they couldn't get otherwise. But maybe it was like, you know, it was like her home-cooked meal. She used like, she never knew her parents. So I don't know where she would have gotten like her mother's chalent recipe from. But okay, be it as it may, the question is, we learned previously that according to the opinion of the Gemara, that this took place actually on Pesach. Remember the 3 days of fasting overlap with Pesach? So the question is, if it's taking place during Pesach and she's hosting a meal, there's a halacha that's on the books. And you look right in the Shulchan Aruch. I'll give you the citation. It's in Orach Chaim, Tuf Kuf Yod Beis, fifth column, that one is not allowed to invite a non-Jew to their Yom Tov meal. So why? No, not just the Seder. It's a bit of a misnomer. It's any Yom Tov meal, actually. The reasoning is because you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov. But the reason you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov is because it adds to the Simchas Yom Tov. But who has a mitzvah on Simchas Yom Tov? Only Jews seem to be commanded in Simchas Yom Tov.
I think I have an answer.
Oh, all right. We're not ready for the answer yet, but you know, you could shoot for it. Why don't you shoot it?
Because Israel can go to war on Yom Kippur to survive. If you can go to war on Yom Kippur to survive, you can certainly invite a goy to a meal on any Jewish holiday in order to save the Jewish people.
Okay, so maybe pikuach nefesh. All right, so that's possible. But I want to say, you know, nowadays, this is like the popular fallback. You know, all the people who don't, it's not you, Zadie, but I'm saying there's a lot of people nowadays who invoke pikuach nefesh whenever they want, and they use it as a heter to gab anything. It's become the new tikkun olam. People learn these two words called pikuach nefesh during COVID, and now they like invoke it like, oh my gosh, how can I not have a three-course breakfast before Shabbos davening? It'd be pikuach nefesh if I get hungry in the middle. So, you know, people widely apply it. And but I think that's a legitimate application. But if we have time, we'll get to the answer at the end. The question is, she's inviting Haman, she's inviting Ahasuerus. They are both bona fide Goyim. So the question is, if it's on Yontif, how she invite them over? Maybe pikuach nefesh is the answer, that's tochet, but maybe we can find a more subtle answer. Toby? Yeah. Oh, okay, so let me clarify. So Toby's asking, you know, who cares if a guy benefits as well? There is a debate, and this actually will be part of the answer that we get to. Right. Okay. So the issue, there's a debate about, let's say I make a huge vat of chalent and then there's some extra for the guy. What's the big deal? So there's a debate if that's, we don't rely on it. The Shulchan Aruch passes against that even in theory, if you make a big vat of chalent, there's still a concern you might cook more extra for that guy. But okay, these are all leading to the answer. So you know what? This is the preview. It sounds like we're very interested to hear the answer. Let's, God willing, get through the Gemara. I mean, not just get through the Gemara, but you want to learn the Gemara. But then at the end, It's a bit of a longer piece. That's why I don't want to just rush it at the beginning, because if we go through the whole thing, then we might not have time for the Gemara. So let's go through the Gemara first. We're on the top of Tesvav Amid Beis, top of 15b. Those who are following in the original text, and those who are following in Tursa Daf, we are on the fifth line. Va'amar Rabbi Elazar. So as we might recall, we had a number of miscellaneous teachings of Rabbi Elazar, the name of Rabbi Chanina. And this is just another one of Rabbi Elazar's teachings. Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina. Asir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lios Atara Berosh Kol Tzadik V'Tzadik. So in the future, God is going to be this crown that's going to be a crown on the heads of each and every righteous person. Shenemar. As it says in the Pasuk, that Hashem, the Lord of hosts, he will be a beautiful crown. So what do we mean that Hashem could be this glorious crown? He's going to be the official translation is a diadem, if I pronounce the word correctly, a beautiful, glorious diadem. So what does it mean that God's going to be an ornament, basically, on their heads? So what it means is we have to play around with the words a little bit. The word svi, la'osin tzivyono, for those who do Hashem's will, l'metzaf in tifarto, and those who are anticipating, you know, like tzipisa liyoshua, are you anticipating the redemption? So those who are anticipating God, who are awaiting God's glory. So yachalichol, I would think this applies to just any Joe who keeps the Torah. Tamalomar, then says, l'shar amo. So you ever hear of a term, anyone who's ever... you don't have to have been to one, but they, when there's a, you're thinking about Tahara? Oh, in what sense? Oh, so I was thinking of a Rebbe's Tish, both places I don't prefer to be at. So there's something what's called Shirayim. So Shirayim are leftovers. Lamisha Mesim Atzmo Kishirayim. Someone who conducts themselves, regards themselves as like the leftovers, then those are the people who God likes. So it's not just people who do God's will and people put on a big show, but people ultimately who don't think that they're better than the next person just because they're trying their best. Everyone's trying their best. Moving on to the next pasuk. Oh, all right. We're thinking of all sorts of Torah connections. Uluruach Mishpat. So this is continuing. There, these pasukim follow each other. Uluruach Mishpat, what's it mean when it says someone who has the spirit of justice, of judgment? Zeh Adonis Yitzro, this is someone who's judging his yetzer, his inclination, and keeping it in check. Uli Yoshev Al HaMishpat, and what's it mean, someone who presides over the judgment? Zeh Adon Din Emes LaMito, this refers to someone who actually adjudicates in a truthful manner, gets to the bottom of it. Uli Gvura, what does it mean, someone who has gvura? Zeha miskaber al yitzro. This refers to one who is able to overcome their evil inclination. Meshivei melchama, those who come back from the ranks of war. It refers to shenosim venosim bemelchata shel Torah. It refers to those who have the give and take, who fight back and forth in the melchata shel Torah, in the wars of Torah. So, you know, there's a number of books that actually are called Mechamas Hashem, the Wars of the Lord. One of the famous ones, well, it's a halachic one, you can find actually in the back of your Gemara. Maybe if you look, in back of many Gemaras will have it. But also you have the Ralbag, you have the Mechamas Hashem. It won't be in the back of the art scroll, though. There's also the Mechamas, they don't have the extra commentaries back there. There's also the Mechamas Hashem of the Ralbag. This is not, a friend of mine, actually, I think it's Avi Hoffman, he gave a whole shiur on going through all the different books that were called Mechamas Hashem. But this idea called Mechamta Shel Torah, you'll see many times in rabbinic literature. One of the most famous instances is the Ravid versus the Rambam. As we might be aware, the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, his magnum opus, his code of Jewish law, the original code. And then the Ravid wrote his commentary, which many times uses very scathing words against the Rambam. And you'll see many times in rabbinic literature, they seem to get very fired up. And some will justify this as it's called Milchanta Shel Torah. You're supposed to get into it. It's supposed to be like a war. You're supposed to fight until you get to the truth of the matter, until you're done Emes Amita. Okay. So, and then finally, Sha'ara, what do you mean by the gates? This refers to the Talmidei Chachamim who get up early and stay late in the shuls and in the Batei Midrashim. So the people who, right, you know, you come for the shir in the morning, you come for the shir in the evening, you're a minyan. So these are the people we're talking about. Amram Midasadivnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Midasadin, the personification of the attribute of judgment, comes before God. This is, of course, a parable, and it says Ribono Sho'olam, Man Ishtanu Elu Me'elu. So why are you taking the side of the Jews? What makes the Jews any better than anyone else in the world? Amar La Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael Asku B'Torah. It's very simple. The Jews are better because they study Torah. Umas Olam Lo Asku Torah. The Muslim don't keep the Torah. What do you mean? Is it their fault that they're not keeping the Torah? So that's the Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah. That's the Medrash. Hashem offered them the Torah, and then they didn't accept the Torah. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that the Yemos HaMashiach, at the end of days, all the Umasol, the nations of the world, are going to come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they're going to say, I know we messed up the first time around, but maybe give us a chance. Give us just one mitzvah. We'll prove our worth. So this is the... I'm sure I must have shared this in a drusha around Sukkot time. It's one of the one of my favorites, and many people's favorites that God has to go to. God gives them the mitzvah of Sukkah. So, and then God brings up the sun and it's sweltering hot. And as we've learned that there is a betur mitzvah, if one is in distress, they're allowed to leave the Sukkah and go back into their home. If it was 90 degrees in your home and you would leave your home because of that. So if it's 90 degrees in the Sukkah, you could go inside your home. So it's no longer a proper dira. So they leave, that's fine. But you know what they did? They gave it a kick on the way out. They show very good to Henry, right? They gave it a kick to show and display their derision. So God says to them, it's one thing if you left the sukkah, that's acceptable. But did you have to kick it on the way out as well to show your derision for the mitzvos? So that's just a little bit to understand how Hashem is able to blame the other nations for not keeping the Torah. Because even when he's going to give them a mitzvah, they're still going to mess it. Certainly not 613, it says. Amar Leh, now there's different girsos in the Gemara, by the way, of how this exchange goes. I'm just going to work with the girsa that is in front of me in our text. There's one girsa which God just continues to, basically, the conversation ends with God defending the Jewish people. The text, the version of the text in my Gemara, and I presume it's the same in yours, which are also Vilna edition, goes as follows. Amar Leh, the Midas HaDin responds to God, Gam Eila B'yayin Shagu B'Shechar To Paku Pelila. So the response is, yeah, but you know what? Those Jews who supposedly learn Torah, I see them going out to the bars. I see them during Kiddush Club. They're all drinking and getting drunk, and they're doing the same thing that the Goyim are doing also. So, you know, Ein Paku El Gehem. So what's it mean? Paku plila. So paku refers to Gehenna. Shenemar v'lotia zoslecha lefuka. As we actually saw, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago, I believe, when Avigail was rebuking David HaMelech, Avigail said, you know, don't let this lead you to Gehenna. She was warning him about not committing a sin. And then ultimately he commits a sin with Bathsheba, as we learned. Vein plila eladayonin. So the word plila refers to judges, the judgment. Shneamar v'nasan v'plilin, and you shall give the money to the judges. So what this pasuk is basically saying is the Jews also have their fair share of sins that make them deserving of going to Gehenna too. And according to our text of the Gemara, it ends there, and Midas HaDin actually gets the last word on the Jews. The other girsa is that God gets the last word and defends the Jews. So it's very interesting to see how this Gemara ends in different versions of the text. I'm not a huge Girsa guy. Academics like to look at Girsa as a text. So I'm not a huge Girsa person, but academics like to do this stuff. They like to compare different manuscripts of the Talmud to see what the originals are, how it varied based on where you find a manuscript. But in instances like this, it's actually really important to know when there's different yourselves, when there's different versions of the text, because you come out with a completely different understanding of a conversation. Certainly in halachic texts, you'll find sometimes in a halachic, I can't think of one of them offhand, but sometimes one or two words can completely change your understanding of a Gemara. Okay, moving forward, Rabosai. Ah, here we are. Here we are. Okay, so these were all miscellaneous teachings of Rabbi Eliezer in the name of Rabbi Hanina. Now we return back once more to our feature presentation. Kind of have to think of this like Mahavad Ali Abdul, like a TV show over here, right? We have like the main show, which is our interpretations of the Megillah, going through the Megillah. And then we have like the commercials, or I don't know what you want to call them. We have like the mini features that are sprinkled in between. So now we're back to the show. But it's like the kosher Super Bowl commercials that you want. Like they're the good ones that you want to see. So Esther is standing inside the Beis HaMelech HaPnimis, inside the inner chamber of the king's palace. So what does it mean by Tamo? Why is she just standing there? What caused her to stop walking? Amar Rav Levi, excuse me, came when she agila Beis HaTzlomim, Nistaka Himena Shechina. When she passed the Beis HaTzlomim, she passed where they did their idol worship, all of a sudden the Shechina, the divine presence, left her. Which, like, it feels very much like something that come up in Star Wars, you know? It's like all of a sudden, like, you know, the dark side clouds everything at that moment. That's what came to mind when I read that, at least. Amra, and then this is very famous here. She says, this is from Tehillim, Eli, Eli, lama azavtani. Oh Lord, why have you forsaken me? By the way, we have to bring in our academic friends. My understanding is that in the Christian Bible, when they talk about
Jesus said that.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. So when Jesus was on the cross, he says, "Oh Lord, why have you forsaken me?" So he was speaking in Aramaic, but he was basically quoting this line in Tehillim. So it's fascinating. We attribute it to Esther. The Christians use that line in Tehillim, and they say that's what Jesus was saying when he's on the cross. Oh Lord, why have you forsaken me? So very fascinating. So yeah. So you're saying that the right. So the question is, it's always bringing up, you know, she's just quoting Tehillim, right? So the question is, I mean, with Tehillim also, you have to have there's a bit of a question of historicity about, you know, David HaMelech wrote the Gemara, certainly parts of Tehillim, but other parts of Tehillim were written at later points. But the point being is, what does it mean when Chazal says that she says this line? It doesn't necessarily mean that Esther, at that moment, she all of a sudden quoted that pasuk in Tehillim. What it means is that coded, remember how we said Tehillim is written with Ruach HaKodesh, it's in Ksuvim. So when David HaMelech, whoever was writing Tehillim at that point, it was done with divine guidance that coded within that line wasn't just David HaMelech expressing himself at that moment, but it was also to express how Esther felt at that moment. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Esther invoked that pasuk at that moment, but it could mean that we're attributing that mindset to Esther. But we can take it that way as well. Why not? Okay. So what did she say? Shema Tadon, I'll show you Kamezid. Are you going to regard someone who sins inadvertently as if they're doing it deliberately? Ba'ones Karatzon, someone who does it under duress or is forced to do it versus someone who willingly sins? Oshema Alsha Karatzon Caliber. Maybe it's because I called Achashverosh a dog. Shinemar had seal mecherv nafshi. Some say she was referring to Haman as the dog. Shinemar had seal mecherv nafshi miyakel v'chidasi. Which again, here we have another pasuk where she's saying to save me from this kelev that's trying to harm me. Ukaraso aryeh, and then she referred to him as a lion, which is more respectful for a king. Shinemar hoshieni mi pi aryeh, that you shall save me from the mouth of the lion. There's a number of interpretations referring to Haman. What was so bad about her disrespecting Nechavit? Sure, she's not such a nice guy. The Mefarshim deal with this question. So the part that interests me a little bit more is the line before him when she says to Hashem, and she laments, Hashem, how can you treat my shogeg as amazing? So if we look at Rashi, Rashi says, Al ones, afal pi shani ba elav me'lai onesu. We have to remember, we learned previously in the Gemara, that Esther used to be an unwilling participant in intimate relations with Ahasuerus. When she approached Ahasuerus to make her case to the Jewish people, she did so beratzon, she did so willingly, and that's what it means, that she's saying, I know I'm willfully engaging in this act, but trust me, I would rather be doing anything else but this. So even though you know this is an ones, this is b'shogeg, don't regard it as baratza, don't regard it as willfully. That's what she contended, and well, thank God, Hashem heard her prayers. Okay, next pasuk. Vahi keros amelech es Esther hamalka. So Esther comes into the chambers, and Ahasuerus, the scepter, the sharvet comes down, and what happens? Amar Rav Yochanan. Gimel Malachi Hasharis Nizdam Labosa Shah. Three angels came down. Now we know an angel has one mission per angel. So we need three angels for this. What were they doing? Echachik Bia Es Savara, one who lifted her neck up to show her face. The Echachim Moshe Chutchel Chesedla, one of them put the sparkly dust, the string of Chesed upon her. And one of them stretched out the scepter toward her. Ukama, and how long did it go? Rav Yirmiyah, shtei amos haya, the midu al shtei misrei. It started off 2 amos long, extended 12 amos long. Ramila al shesh misrei, some say 16. Ramila al esrim arba, some say went up to 24. The metzniza tana al shishin went up to a whopping 60, according to Abraisa. I mean, at some point, he's probably going to impale her, no? Now, what does this remind you of, biblically? Where else do we know of something extending unnaturally? Think about the arm of Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, to reach out to baby Moshe. So her arm extends. So Motzi Ba'Motzi Shel Bas Paro, we find it there as well. You find this regarding the teeth of the wicked. We'll explain what this means momentarily. Shini Rishaim Shibarta, that the teeth of the wicked you have destroyed, you have broken. Vamaresh Lakish, Al Tikri Shibarta Elishir Bafta. Don't read it as it is broken, but rather you have elongated it. Rabba Bar Ofran Amar Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Shame Rabba Varabba Mirabba Masayim. And then the final sheet is that it went up to 200 Amos. And again, it must have been a pretty big room, made a big hole that it could actually fit the scepter that far down. So, yeah, exactly. So, so Rashi fills in a little bit. What are we talking about? Where do we know a story in Tanakh where the teeth of someone wicked extends? Very odd. What are we referring to? So, if you look at Rashi quotes for us the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos on Endowment base, that it's a story about Og Melech HaBashan. He lifted up a mountain. He was a giant. So he lifted up a mountain and he's like, oh, let me crush all these ants. Let me crush all these Jews with this mountain. So what did God do? God said, oh, you try to kill these ants. I'll send some real ants over here. The ants, they basically started burrowing in the mountain. They made it unstable. Then the whole mountain began to fall down on Og and crush him. And he tried to pivot away. I don't fully understand what this looked like, but supposedly his teeth extended and then launched him into the mountain and he couldn't get out. And there's also a story about Moshe taking an axe and then leaving and killing Og Melech HaBashan. I think if you look in Me'am Lois, that's usually the best collection of all these fantastic midrashim. So anyway, that's where you get teeth extension from. Good. Moving on, we have, what's the next one? Vayomer LaHamelech LeEsther, next pasuk. So now the king says, LeEsther Amalka, Ma Bakashaseich, Ad Katzi Amalchus V'Seyos. So Ahasuerus offers her up to half the kingdom she can have. Now, let's read this closely. Chatzi Amalchus will call Amalchus. Half the kingdom as opposed to the entire kingdom. But the word chatzi also sounds like the word chotzi. It's a chatzitza. When someone goes to the mikvah, you're not have a chatzitza, something interposing between you and the water. Below davar shechotzi tzlamalchus, not something that goes in middle of the kingdom, that separates and splits up the kingdom. Umay nihu, binyan beis hamikdash. It was very clear that he was not going to give her the rights to rebuild the beis hamikdash. Now, maybe that wasn't explicit, because how was he to know that she would want to rebuild the beis hamikdash, right?
He didn't know she was Jewish, supposedly, right?
Exactly. So it'd be odd if that's what he was indicating. He's presumably meant a place like the beis hamikdash. But you look at Rashi. Rashi talks about Emet Shesia and how the world comes from the center of the world actually is the beis hamikdash. Now this is very important. Because in the dateline sugya, so there's a whole question about how we draw the Jewish dateline. Is there an event taking place here? 7:30. Oh. Okay. I think the base measure is the base measure open. Oh, so the base measure is open actually. The Wi-Fi goes the entire. Yeah. Okay, Shkayak guys. Ah. So where were we? In the Jewish dateline sugya. So the question is, well, you know, where do we measure things from? So we treat Jerusalem, we treat Yerushalayim as the center of the world. And so do we go 90 degrees from there? And what do you, so, okay, that's a whole separate shear. And every time I look up the whole dateline, so yeah, I walk out more confused than I walked in. So you should know, numbers are my kryptonite. Anytime numbers come up, whenever someone, I do it, I sit down and I work through, whenever someone comes like, hey, Rabbi, can you calculate for me, you know, like when's the yard site, whatever. I'm like, oh boy, I have to sit down with the calendar. But trust me, I do it for anyone who needs. Don't hesitate to reach out. That's part of the job. Okay. Yavo HaMelech Muhammad El HaMishnah. Every time I say Haman, I'm expecting Toby to bang over there. You got to make up for all the banging we missed this year. Got to do Tashlumin. Yavo HaMelech Muhammad El HaMishnah. Tanur Avonon. Sama Rasa Esther Shesimah Saman. This is the question everyone asks. What is Esther doing inviting Haman to the suit over here? Certainly there are other things she could have done to get her plan across. So... Right. Oh, okay. So we'll get to the Yontif. We'll get back to the Yontif question soon. But you're right; it's an issue with that Hashirish. But before we get into the Yontif question, which is the extra credit part, just shout in the Gemara. So we're gonna have, let's see if I counted this right, I think 11 different suggestions for why it was important for Esther to keep inviting Haman to these meals. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Pachin Timnolo. She's trying to set up a trap for him. The idea is, you know, you sit down and you drink enough alcohol, you eventually will say something stupid and an Achashverosh will get offended and then he'll say, off with his head. That's what happened to Vashti after all. So Pachim Timnal, Shnemar Yehi Shulchan Lefnei Lefach, that your table where you're eating, it'll be a trap for you. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, mi base of Bihalam, that she learned from her father's household, Shnemar Imra Ev Sonach Achilu Lechem, that if your enemy is hungry, you shall feed him bread. So just a few interesting things in this line over here. Number one, well, first of all, what's Pshat? Pshat is that Esther was trying to get on Haman's good side. Esther wanted to make sure that Haman didn't see any threat. You know what they compare this to, by the way? They compare this to the following. Yeah, you remember how we have the carbon, the seer la'azazel on Yom Kippur? We send that poor goat off the mountain. So what's the idea? Who is Azazel? I think they're meeting in the base medrash. All right, good to see you, Harvey. Mr. President, good to see you.
Isn't it where is Azazel, no?
Where is Azazel? Or who is Azazel? So there is a fascinating Ibn Ezra and Ramban and crazy thing. But basically, some understand that it's actually a bribe to the Satan. It's a bribe we give to Satan not to prosecute us on Yom Kippur. I don't know, like Rosh Hashanah, we managed to confuse him with shofar and all that. But on Yom Kippur, we actually, it's a crazy notion because you're not allowed to give karbanos to anyone other than God. So what is this Sir La'azazel that's built into our religion that we are bribing we're bribing the Satan not to prosecute us before Hashem. You know, we had a wonderful 10:30 share with Rabbi Rosenfeld. We're talking about intercessory prayer, praying to tzaddikim. I would think Kal v'chomer, praying or trying to bring karbanos and bribe the Satan. Amachas kama v'kama, that's theologically problematic. But there's, it's fascinating. So the Yehayam, the more v'shemesh quotes as follows, in order to prevent Satan from coming to prosecute us, we bring two of the same goats, and when Satan sees that the same offering we're bringing to God, we're bringing to him as well, we therefore placate him. He's like, these guys are serving me also. You know, maybe I shouldn't be prosecuting them after all. Not only that, maybe Satan will actually put in a few good words for us. Crazy. But what's the connection? That's why Esther invited Haman over as well. This was his way of inviting over Haman, sorry, of her winning over Haman, that Haman wouldn't prosecute, and maybe even he would get on their side as well. So she was basically trying to wine and dine and bribe Haman that, who knows, maybe wouldn't come to blows, maybe he wouldn't be executed, maybe she could win him over through diplomacy instead. But as we, of course, learned, some people are not won over through diplomacy, and that's a what happens at the end of this story. Okay. Next, there's one other part over here, and then the rest of the scouting should fly really smooth. One other point, you notice it says, "Mi base aviha lamda," from her father's household, she learned this pasuk. Why is that say from her father's household? In fact, so first of all, her father died before she was born, as we learned in the Gemara. So Rashi says, "Mi base aviha lamda, shamati inokos omrim kein." She learns it from the children. Why is it important to know that she heard from the children? So one understanding is because women are not supposed to be learning Torah. So who would have taught it to her? So she must have heard it from the children. It's a whole side sig over here about women in Talmud Torah. As you can know, we definitely paskin on a certain side of that debate. So we'll leave it at that. Moving on. Right, Meir Omer. Kidei shelo yitol eitzah v'yimrod. This is in order not to placate him vis-a-vis her and the Jewish people, but in order so that he should be on good terms with Achashverosh, and Achashverosh should be on good terms with him. She was worried that Haman might try to mount a rebellion or try to usurp Achashverosh. When you think about it, when you think of him as the unwitting person, you think of him as the calculating smart guy. It's not a crazy idea to think that he might try through political means to usurp Achashverosh. Okay, but Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kidesh Lo Yakir Bashihi Yehuda. This was an order that he wouldn't recognize that she was Jewish. I don't fully understand this, but someone can tell me if you have another understanding, a good understanding of this. But essentially, I guess the idea was that if they were so close, you know, who would ever come so close to an anti-Semite? So if she's hanging out with this anti-Semite so much, you would never suspect her of being a Jew. If she was always trying to avoid him every time he turned the corner, she moved away, then he would have his suspicions. But if she felt comfortable hanging out with him, then he wouldn't suspect she's Jewish. So I think that's pshat. You know what the issue is? This is, I'm getting in trouble when I say this. Never mind. But you can think of it, what it means in modern politics, where we had this recently. So we might say, we have an inside man or an inside woman in the White House or in the King's Palace. So if it was clear that Esther was there advocating for the Jewish people wouldn't fast, they wouldn't daven, they wouldn't be praying for their lives, because they'll say, Esther will advocate for us, we're good to go. So Esther wanted it to appear as if she was buddies with Haman, and she was going to allow Haman to kill all the Jews while she would be saved. Because if she didn't make it appear so, then everyone would just assume she would take care of them. They would pray to Hashem. Rabbi Yossi Omer. This is after, oh, that's a good question, chronologically. I think it's already, yeah, this would have to be after the fast because she already went to approach the king. She approaches the king once they start fasting for her. So this would be after the fast, so it does fit in that way. Good question. Rayosi Omer, Kadeshi Yehe Matzela B'chol Eis. Rayosi says, in order so that he would be found near her at any time. So Rashi says, Ulai Tuchalach Shilo B'shum Dar L'fnei HaMelech. She wanted him always around. That way, you know, she could try to navigate the conversation in a way that Haman would say something stupid that Achashverosh would be offended by, and then Achashverosh would say, off with his head. Next shot, Rabbi Shimon ben Manasya Omer, we're up to number 7, if I'm counting correctly. Omer, Ulai Yargish HaMakum V'yasal Adonais. Maybe God would feel so bad for her that he would bring a miracle. That's one of the interpretations that Rashi gives, that that God's going to see, oh, this Halakha Tzaddikus, this Adol Esther, why does she have to spend so much time with this terrible, wicked Rasha Haman? You know what? I'm just going to have to save her from this and knock out Haman. Okay, that's what she was hoping for.
Excuse me, the question from a minute ago on when this happened. Yes. It was on the third day of the fasting.
Yes,
it actually says by Yom HaShlishi.
It says by Yom HaShlishi. I was just inferring actually, right? Because it's a good thing we have our leaner with us. Henry says it's explicit in the pasuk. It's going to be Balkore. I only see the second better quoted here in the Gemara. I knew this was. We know this is after Esther approaches Achashverosh, and we know she asked everyone to fast for her when she approached him. So that was my inference. Right. But who needs an inference when you have it explicitly in the pasuk? Very good, Henry. Okay. I remember one time I gave a shiur on some Wayi Torah. You know what it was? We're talking about Yehuda and Tamar. And it's someone, and you know, about the prostitution, how it can be with Tamar. Someone asked me, oh, but what about Yehuda's wife? He had a wife beforehand. You know, that's how he had children. So why was he going to solicit a prostitute? So she was dead. But I was like, I totally forgot that it says explicitly in the pasuk that she died. So, you know, this is why you got to read the psukim. Okay. Rashi Mekarcha Omer, Asberlo Panim Kadeshi Yaharek Hu Vahi. She made it look like she was interested in him. And that way, Achashverosh would get jealous and he would want to knock out the competition. Ragamliel Omer, Melech Hafchafchan Paya. So, what's Hafchafchan? Rashi tells what Hafchafchan is. He was someone who, constantly went back and forth. He was someone who was fickle. He couldn't make up his mind. He would constantly renege on what he said. So what would happen? What would happen is that he would be upset at Haman one moment, but if action wasn't taken soon thereafter, he would then be forgiving. This is why, you know, after Vashti committed this atrocity of refusing the king, he immediately called his advisors. And I said, no. Mamuchan came forward, whoever that was, off with her head, and it was done. This is similar, by the way, the Gemara at the beginning, Subos, talks about why a woman, well, man and woman, get married on Wednesdays. The reason is because Beis Din is open the next day on Thursday. So if he finds out that he was told that she was a basula, that she's a virgin, and it turns out she's not, and he suspects her of infidelity, so then he'll be angry the next morning and he'll go straight to Beis Din at the beginning of the day, right? Like, you know, at 8, you know, at 7 a.m., he'll already be online, like at the DMV at the Beis Din there, and he'll bring in his case right away.
But I thought most weddings are on Yom HaShlishi.
I don't know if that's what happens nowadays, but Yom Ravi.
So we do everything on Yom HaShlishi.
All right, the Gemara in Ksuba, the Mishnah in Ksuba says otherwise.
Wednesday? Wow.
I mean, nowadays we don't have Bate Dinim that are, you know, specifically open on Mondays and Thursdays, so it's not really relevant anymore. Just don't do it on Shabbos, you know, because in doing it on Shabbos it could be an issue. One of the issues is you can't be Kona something on Shabbos. You're not allowed to acquire something. So the condition's a Kenyan. So, okay. We'll pocket that one along with the woman in Talmud Torah. How about that? Amar Rabbi Gamliel. Next shot. This is number 10, I believe. Adayin Srich Anul Modai. We still need the shot of the Modai. The Tanya Rabbi Lezer HaModai. Omer Kinaso b'mal Kinaso b'sarim. You see, until now, all the pshatim we gave explain why he was why she invited Haman, because vis-a-vis Ahasuerus. But also, what he adds is she did this. You know, I always imagine. Actually, I always had two different imaginations of how the parties went. It was only Ahasuerus and only Haman. That's how I thought of as a kid. And then when I got older, I'm like, there's no way it's just Ahasuerus and Haman. Presumably, there's like other people there, but like Ahasuerus and Haman were like the VIP guests. But seemingly, this actually, according to Gemara, was a party just for Ahasuerus, just for Haman, their own triangular dinner party that they had. And this was in order so that Haman would also be on bad terms with the rest of the servants of the king. That way they too would not conspire together with Haman. And that way they actually would, when Ahasuerus would say off with his head or hang him, they would be for that ruling. Rabba Amar, we're almost at the end. V'nei Shever Ga'on. So before, the idea is that before, I guess the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Before someone's downfall, they are raised up. So she wanted to raise him up as high as he could go. That way he could be brought down. Because once you're all the way up, the only place to go is down from there. Abaye v'Rava, Damri Tervayu, Abaye and Rava are in agreement. They say, B'chomim ashes es mishtehem. This is a pasuk in reference to Baal Shatzar after they drank a lot of wine and he died that night. So it was after they drank a lot of wine because they were thirsty. It was hot. So, and apparently, you know, it's like when I was a kid and I got back to my bunk room and camp after a baseball or basketball game. And all I had was soda. So I just drank the soda, even though you should really have water. So that's what they did. They drank the wine. And then, as we know, Baal Shatzar doesn't wake up the next morning. Ashkei Rabbi Ravul Eliyahu. So Rav Aravua was walking and just casually bumps into Eliyahu Hanavi. Amrle, Kaman Chazia Esther Abdahachi. So new, we have, if I count it correctly, 11 different suggestions as to why Esther invited Haman to her suda. So new, which of the 11 is correct? Amrle, Elu, please, this basic Elu Ve'elu. Kikulu Tanai Kula Marai. Ola Tanayin, Ola Marayin. There's a little bit of truth in each and every one that they said. And she was Yotzei L'chol HaDeyas. Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chai. Beautiful. Everyone's right. Everyone can do what they want. No, don't quote me on that. Okay. Moving forward to the next pasuk. We now find ourselves in Perek Hei Pasuk Yud Aleph. Veisavrlam Haman Es Kvod Ashro Rov Banav. So it talks about Rov Banav. So how many sons did he have? Amarav Shloshim. So I always thought he just had 10 sons. Apparently, there was more. He had 30. Asar Mesu, 10 died. Basara Nitlu, 10 were hanged. Basara Mechazrin Alpsach. And the other 10, they became paupers, and they went around collecting for, the rest of their days. Rabbanan Amri, the Rabbanan say, Osan Shemechazar Absochim Shivim Havya. It was actually 70 sons that went around and had to collect for themselves. They said, Svein Belechem Niskaru, that those who are satiated with Rebbe, what do you guys satiated? Altikri Sveim Ela Shivim. Don't read it as satiated, but Shivim as 70. For Rami Bar Abba, Amar Kulad,
how do we get from Tfilas Chana to, which is where that pasuk comes from, right? Svein Belechem Nizkaru, right?
So if you look in Targum Yonasan, Rashi actually, I think, quotes it.
Yeah.
In Targum Yonasan, he understands an allusion to Haman. Now you're asking, so new, what does it have to do with Haman and his sons? I am not certain about that offhand, but Yonasan, as we learned at the beginning of our travels and adventure through Masechet Megillah, was the definitive Targum on Sifrei Nevi'im, He seems to think this is an allusion to the sons of Haman. How? Why? I'm not sure.
I'll look into my shawl later, see if he's...
Do me a favor. Let me know if he says anything. Yeah, okay. I mean, you can always just fall back and say you had a Masorah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's always the cop-out answer. But yeah, please, I always appreciate Henry. You generally send me emails when you dig up something. So do let me know. Thank you. Right. Rabbi Chama Amru, Amar Kulan Masayim Ushmona Havu.
There are actually 208. Don't ask me how he manages. Shneamar v'rov banav. Right? You know, you thought like the families living in Brooklyn with 15.5 kids, those were huge. He had 208 kids. Like, this would be a reality show over that. That
it's the gematria of rov banav.
Yes. No, but imagine a reality show about Haman and his family. That'd be like a Yehud and Ba'in sketch. So, right. So, Rov is the gematria of that. However, the Gemara asked, to Henry's point, for Rov, the gematria must be Arbisaha. But wait a minute, you counted up. Resh is 200. Vav and Vav, 6 plus 6, so 206. What?
Yes, the right question.
And Bays, 214. Yeah, I counted it right. Okay. Yeah. I told you, numbers isn't my thing.
Okay.
Musim Barbisa have is 214. So Ranav Ksiv. The way it is written is Virav without the Vav. So the way it's written is about the Vav, and that's how we get not 214, but 208. Henry, can you confirm? Is that actually how it's written? I thought I saw something in the Farshim about is it actually Virav or is it Virov written in the Megillah itself?
It's in the Megillah, it's Kosser. The second Vav isn't there.
Oh, well, there you go. So it's Ksiv. Wonderful. Ah, okay, we're up to our final section for tonight. Belailahu, Nadinash, Nasamelech. Different people have different styles, that some Bali Kriya do that. So Achashverosh is trying to fall asleep. He can't fall asleep. Or, well, is it Achashverosh? Let's see. Amar Rabbi Tanchum, Nadashnatz Malchus Shalaylam. It was the king of the world that couldn't fall asleep, as it were. Hashem couldn't fall asleep, as it were, because he was so concerned for the welfare of the Jewish people. And this, of course, follows a general interpretation that Hashem's not mentioned in the Megillah, but perhaps a number of the mentionings of Hamelech is really in reference to Hashem. For Rabbanan Amri, the Rabbanan suggests Nadu al Yonim Nadu Tachtonim, that those on high and those below also were unable to sleep. You look in Rashi. Rashi says, Shahayim Malachim Avhilim Oso Kolayev Amrlo Kafoy Tova Shalim Shilim Tova Lemisha Asav. So Rashi says the angels were saying, you know, come on, Achashverosh, pay back Mordechai already. You kafoy tov, you have no akursa tov from saving your life. Another interpretation, Rashi, is that they were supplicating and praying for the Jewish people. And then, Rav Amar, Shnatz Amelech Achashverosh Mamash. All the pasuk is saying is what it sounds like. Achashverosh just, he had too much, you know, he went to a lecture, he went to a meeting, and there was caffeinated coffee instead of decaf coffee being served. And so he was up the rest of the night because of that. Right? We served decaf at our meetings at night. But Achashverosh, he didn't go to a good Hashem. So they actually served caffeinated coffee. So he's up at night. Nafale milsa b'dayte. And as happens to many people, when they can't fall asleep, something is bothering them, is running through their mind. So Amar, my dekama dizim nase Esther lahaman. The question we were just wondering about. Why is Esther keep inviting Haman over? Dilma itzakashakni lui dahu gavra lemigdale. Maybe they want to kill this man, referring to himself. Maybe they want to kill me. Maybe they're conspiring against me. Hada amar ihachi lava gavra derachili dahava modali. Is there no person, if they're really conspiring against me, is there no one who's loyal to me that would tell me about this? Hada amar, huh? Dilma ika inish ava biti vusa. Maybe people do good for me, and I'm not good at repaying them for the good that they do. And since I don't reward people for helping me out, why would they put their necks on the line for me if there's nothing for them to gain from it? Simeon, and that's what he says. That's when he calls in his servant to bring in the Sefer Zichronos, so that he can see who he owes a debt to. The Unikram of Unikraim, the Lamish Nikram Elehen, and the way Nikraim is written, it implies that actually, Shimshi, he didn't want to read the line that said that he owed Mordechai a debt. And so actually, This was the first instance of an ebook. It actually just read that section out loud on its own. Fascinating. Vayimsa kasum, and it says, and it was found kasum. Kasum yivayle. You should really say kasav. Kasav sounds like it was written just now on the spot. Kasav connotes that it was written a long time ago. So malamed sheshimshi mochik the Gavriel kosum. What happened? Shimshi Rashi points out he's been around for a while as an antagonist against the Jewish people, and he would keep erasing the line that talked about Mordechai, and every time he would erase it, the angel Gavriel would come in, and he would write it back in. So just imagine this, like, this is humorous. Eventually, of course, Achashverosh gets fed up and says, just tell me what it says already. Amar Rabasi Darsha Shila Ish Kafar Tamrasa Uma Kosav Shalmata Shalzchusa Shalitzral Ino Nimchak. If it is true that the merit of the Jewish people here in this world is not erased, Kosav Shalamala Kol Shekein, certainly in the world to come, all of our schuyos, all of the merit that we earned will not be erased. And we'll just do a line and a half more. Lo nasimo davar. Amarava lo menisho avinis Mordechai el meshes sonen es Haman. Ah, so why is it that the servants were, they seem to take Mordechai's side. They seem okay with Mordechai getting the good treatment and noting that Mordechai really should be rewarded. It wasn't because they liked Mordechai. Now, they were still anti-Semites, but it's that they hated Mordechai. They hated Haman more than they despised Mordechai. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Now one last line. Hechen lo, tana lo, tana lo hechen. So it says that Haman prepared the tree for him. What it means is lo hechen. He dug his own grave. He prepared the tree really for himself. Okay, that's the end of the Gemara. I wanted to just, we have 7 minutes left, so let me just get back to our question from the beginning. So we learned a lot about Esther hosting Haman at the Suda. We went through all the rationales for why she may have hosted Haman. The question is, how is she allowed to host Haman on Yontif? So there's a few. So the answer, this is noted by the Yaros Devash. And he suggests, remember how we learned, I think it was last time, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just check. Yeah. It was at the end of last time we learned from, based on the Medrash that the Gemara alludes to, that Mordechai actually is the rightful owner of Haman. Haman is actually the servant of Mordechai because they went out to military conquest together. Haman used up all the money. He was the corrupt leader. So then he sold himself to Haman in order to provide provisions for his, it's a Medrash. Yalkut Shmoni quotes it. But the Gemara is alluding to that. We learned it at the end of last time, maybe a little too quickly. And so you know what the halacha is? It's true. I'm not allowed to invite my coworker, my non-Jewish coworker, over for a Yom Tov meal. But my servant who's in my home, he is not just a member of my household, but someone who's an Eved Kanani already has a pseudo-Jewish status who you would be allowed to cook for. So what happened? Well, okay, that solves Haman, but what about Achashverosh? Achashverosh still wasn't Jewish. Ah, so this is what it means when it says in the pasuk. First, it says at the first Suda, Henry, you'll appreciate this. It says a sisi lo that I prepared, I made for him. At the second Suda, it says let me get the right lashon. Asher esel lahem. That I will prepare for them. So at the first Suda, when it's in singular, lo, it's saying the first Suda was on Yontif, the second Suda was not on Yontif. So the first Suda, right, so the Suda that was done on Yom Tov, that Suda she prepared for Haman, and whatever extra food there was went to Achashverosh. And the second Suda was not on Yom Tov. She was allowed to have Achashverosh in mind, even though he was non-Jewish. So he could actually be medayik the Pesukim. Now, the issue is, the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not allowed to do that trick. You're not allowed to have a non-Jew under any circumstances. And also, he says you're not allowed to prepare food for your non-Jewish servant. A non-Jewish servant still doesn't make the cut. Presumably, I guess maybe they don't have the mitzvah Simchas Yom Tov. So there's other answers given. One cop-out answer is she prepared all the food before Yom Tov. Or another answer that's given that Rav Zilberstein gives based on the Minchas Yitzchak is the Minchas Yitzchak was asked, someone had a hotel and it was mostly Jewish guests, but there were non-Jewish guests, but there's a lot of non-Jewish guests also. So the question was, when they were preparing food for the non-Jewish guests who were there over Yom Tov, how were they allowed to do that? So the answer was they had non-Jewish workers. So we have is what's called the shvus, a double derabanan. One, it's only one iser derabanan to prepare food for a guy on Yom, to have a guy over for Yom Tov. The second issue is amir la'akab, a guy doing it. So a guy preparing food for another guy on Yom Tov is a shvus the shvus. Is the real issue sitting down to eat? The issue I don't think is the act of sitting down per se, but it's more the idea of hosting for a meal. In theory, let's say if I host, so she's saying it's a hotel program considered hosting. Here it's even worse. Here you're actually cooking food for these guys on Yom Tov.
That's what I was going to ask. Is that the issue, cooking or preparing? There's two different things.
There's two issues. You're not allowed to cook for a guy on Yom Tov.
Okay, but Esther may not be cooking. She may not have been cooking. Remember, she was a vegetarian. Maybe she just ate salad.
I don't know. I'd be pretty upset if I was Achashverosh and Haman and I showed up to a uncooked meal. I always told Marissa, because I'm not into like preparing meals, and Marissa forces me to make the green beans and the cauliflower and stuff. So I play my part, but I always told her, when we're hosting friends over at Kew Garden Hills, I say, you know what? I want to try what's called a cereal pseudo.
Uh-huh.
Reese's Puffs. Frosted flakes, different kinds of milks, the organic milk, a chocolate milk, and it'll be a very diverse and it'll be pretty fun. A cereal pseudo, very minimal preparation required
for
Shabbos. That was my suggestion. As you can imagine, Marissa thinks that.
I would suggest that she was a queen, and so she didn't actually prepare the food herself. She had serves preparing it.
Yeah. Very good. So that's another interpretation that's given, but then that comes to the question of Amir La'akam, and that's the answer given based on that Rav Zilberstein gives based on Minchas Yitzchak, that she was doing an Amir La'akam by having him on her behalf. The issue is, we learned in the Gemara that she had specifically Jewish servants working for her. Was that what you were going to say, Henry?
No.
Okay. So there's a lot more to elaborate, but I thought I'd raise that point. 7:59. We have to conclude here. Shkoch, everyone, thank you for coming wishing you all a wonderful restful Shabbos. I will be away at the in-laws, and there's no shir Sunday morning. So, all right, we'll get back to learning again soon.
Have a great Shabbos.
Good Shabbos, everybody.
Good Shabbos, everyone. Take care.
Darn it.